Hare Krishna. I'd like to welcome all of you to Shri Shri Radha Muridas Temple here at the Bhakti Center. Thank you very much for coming. This evening we have a very special speaker, very great fortune, one of the very intimate and dear disciples of Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, the founder of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, His Holiness Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj. And Arrivo. We requested, actually it was Radha Vallabha Prabhu's suggestion, that Maharaj will speak on Srila Prabhupada. Because Maharaj had the good fortune to spend the last year and a half, pretty much 24 hours with Srila Prabhupada, and when Prabhupada was present still on this planet. So he has a lot of personal experience. So this is a very rare treasure for us. All of us who have never had the personal association, and has been always been our experience, and when those great souls who, you know, invited Srila Prabhupada into their heart and dedicate their life to his mission, whenever they speak about their spiritual teachers, then that teacher manifests. And then we have the good fortune of directly associating with Srila Prabhupada again and again. So that's just the mystic, the magic and the mystical aspect of the spiritual relationship, that there are this association with Srila Prabhupada is always available, and it's coming through sound vibration from his dedicated followers, and we have a good fortune of having a very dedicated follower among us. So thank you, Maharaj.
Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chokshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaiham Dadati Swapadantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vashadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare, Hare.
I first met Srila Prabhupada in a dream. I got a book written by Srila Prabhupada, Nectar of Devotion, and as I started to read it, from the very first page, it occurred to me that this is what I was actually looking for. And the next day, next night, I had a dream of Srila Prabhupada, and I saw Srila Prabhupada was sitting on a throne which looked like a majestic throne, And those days I didn't know what a Vyasasan was, because in India, the saintly people, they sit on a rather simple seats. They don't sit on such gorgeous asanas that looks more like a throne. So I saw Srila Prabhupada sitting on a throne, and there was a brilliant light around Srila Prabhupada, as if the light was coming out of from his body. And just the sight of Srila Prabhupada made me feel that finally I found my spiritual master. I was in India, I was searching for a guru, I was searching for a spiritual master. Prior to that, I was in Europe. And when I went back to India, I went back with an idea that as soon as I go back to India, I'll find a guru. Because there's so many gurus in India, so to find a guru won't be difficult at all. Like, but when I went to India and started to meet these saintly people, sadhus, I had a real difficulty in finding somebody to whom I could surrender myself completely. Because they looked, many of them, if not most of them, looked like somewhat like my hippie friends in the West. And then at some point I gave up my search, totally frustrated, thinking that if at all I have a guru, then let him come and pick me up. I had been searching for him for so long and I couldn't find him. And when I gave up my search, it was around that time that I got the Nectar of Devotion by Srila Prabhupada. And as I started to read it, it seemed that everything became clear, that this is the path, this is the way. What actually impressed me so much about the Nectar of Devotion, actually from the very first page of Nectar of Devotion, was that all this while I was thinking that liberation was the goal of life. But when I started to read Nectar of Devotion, then I came to know that there are 5 kinds of liberation. And out of them, 1 is a negative liberation and 4 other are positive. I mean, that itself just impressed me so much. I felt that here is a real wisdom, real information. And then Prabhupada made it so clear that God is a person. My understanding prior to that was more of an impersonal understanding of God, that some energy, some light, no clear understanding whatsoever. And then Prabhupada just made it so clear that God is a person and Krishna is God. So all my doubts, all my misconceptions were just removed in just first 2 pages of that book. And I just kept on reading. I couldn't stop reading that book. It was so engrossing. It was so fascinating. All the information was so meaningful. And the next night, I had that dream of Srila Prabhupada. And I made up my mind that this is the path that I am going to take, and I'm going to surrender to Srila Prabhupada. So I went to the Calcutta temple, and I found out that Srila Prabhupada was in America at that time. So I thought that I would wait till Srila Prabhupada came back to India, and then I would surrender unto him. And in the meantime, I would just travel around to the places where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed his pastimes, Krishna performed his pastimes, thinking that the first place I went to was Mayapur, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace. And those days, Mayapur setup was quite small compared to what Mayapur is today. But there were quite a few devotees. There were quite a few devotees. And those days, all the devotees were practically, even in India, most of the devotees were Westerners, Americans or Europeans. Like a little while ago, Jagupurush Prabhu was telling me that he was watching a video of Srila Prabhupada giving a lecture. It's all right. Don't worry. It's okay. Prabhupada was giving a lecture, and when the camera panned to the audience, he was saying all were Americans. Like, and I was telling her, actually, those days, Indians were, in ISKCON were a, Indians were a rare community, rare commodity in ISKCON those days. And very few Indians were actually involved, even in India. And so most of the devotees were Westerners. And Mayapur was very remote. Very few people used to go there those days. And everybody whom I spoke to in the temple, they just kept on asking me, why don't you stay? Why don't you stay with us? And I also started to think that I already made up my mind that I would join ISKCON, so why don't I join? So the next morning, I got shaved up and took dhoti and kurta, and I went to Ganga. I threw away my old clothes and put on dhoti and kurta and became a devotee. Maybe there was a little doubt at the back of my mind, what if I do not want to become a devotee? What if I do not want to be a part of ISKCON? And then I thought that, well, in 2 months' time, my hair will grow. And if I want, I can go back. And then I was waiting for Srila Prabhupada to come back to India. And when I joined, I became involved in so many activities, because those days there were very few Indians in the movement, and there was so much to do, and I got heaps of services. One of the main service that I had was to do the purchase of the building materials. In Mayapur those days, we were building the longest building in Bengal, a 750 feet long building. And so they asked me to do the purchasing. So from the very beginning of my involvement in ISKCON, I got involved in so many activities like that. But at the same time, whenever I used to get some time, I used to go to some libraries. And there I found the early writings of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada's writings from 1948 onwards, 48 to 52. And I compiled them together in a book and I was printing that book also. So in the meantime, Srila Prabhupada came to India, and then finally we traveled to Kumbh Mela in Allahabad. That was 77 January. And Prabhupada was in Kumbh Mela, and we met him. Those days, it was very difficult to have any access to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada had about 10,000 followers, and everybody was dying to have a few minutes with him. And Prabhupada's health also was not very good, so devotees who were his secretaries and personal servants, they were really guarding Srila Prabhupada. So when I saw that it was so difficult to have access to Srila Prabhupada or to approach to Srila Prabhupada, then I didn't make any effort to approach him. But fortunately, one day I got to know that Srila Prabhupada decided to leave Kumbh Mela and go to Calcutta. And then I was informed that a small group of devotees would be traveling with Srila Prabhupada, and I had been included in that team. And I literally jumped with joy with the prospect that, and it was actually due to one of my senior godbrothers who included me in the team. He was the leader of Mayapur at that time, Bhavananda Maharaj. And he actually came and told me that Prabhupada was leaving Kumbh Mela. He was going to go to Calcutta. And I have also been included in the team that would travel with him. And in the evening, the train started. So soon after the train started to move, we took rest. The next morning, Bhavananda came to me and told me that he wanted to take me to Srila Prabhupada. And I was kind of hesitating. I didn't tell him anything, but there was something that was holding me sort of back from, or kind of thinking, like, am I really qualified to go to Srila Prabhupada? And some thoughts were going like, if I go to Srila Prabhupada, he will see how sinful and fallen I am. And if Srila Prabhupada rejects me, seeing my fallen condition, then what will happen? So I was just, and Bhavananda probably could understand what was going on in my mind. So he caught me by my hand and dragged me through the corridor, and he opened the door of the compartment and pushed me in. And I fell flat, offering obeisances. When I got up, I saw Prabhupada was looking at me, and then Prabhupada asked me to sit next to him. The first class compartment in Indian trains have two seats facing each other. In the other seat, three very senior devotees were sitting, and the temple president of Calcutta was sitting on the floor, and Prabhupada was sitting in one seat. So Prabhupada asked me to sit next to him. So I told Prabhupada I'd rather sit on the floor. And Prabhupada said, no, sit here. So when Prabhupada insisted, I just sat in one corner of the seat. And after some initial exchanges, Srila Prabhupada told me to translate his books into Bengali. And I told him, Prabhupada, I don't have any experience in translating. Will I be able to translate your books? And Prabhupada said, practice makes a man perfect. So, just do it. And although I said that, although I had that initial hesitation, but at the same time I was feeling very excited that Prabhupada is giving me such an important service, because I knew to Prabhupada the books were the most important things. And I also heard that Prabhupada was very particular about the Bengali translation, because many of the books that Srila Prabhupada presented were originally in Bengali. So Prabhupada's translation of Prabhupada's works from English to back to Bengali, Prabhupada was very, very careful about. And when I heard that Prabhupada was giving me that service, I felt very excited. And another thing that happened is that service provided me an access to Srila Prabhupada anytime I wanted. Nobody actually questioned me. Whenever I wanted to see Srila Prabhupada, I had an access to Prabhupada's room. And then soon after that, Srila Prabhupada one day called me, one afternoon, Prabhupada called me and he gave me a stack of letters in Bengali. And he asked me to translate those letters. I'm sorry, not translate, but reply those letters. The way I used to do it is, Prabhupada wanted me to first read those letters out loud to him. I used to read out those letters, and then Prabhupada used to give me the points, what to write. And then I used to make a draft, rough draft of the reply and bring them to Srila Prabhupada and read them out to Srila Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada would make some corrections and suggest some corrections. And then I would make a final draft on Prabhupada's letterhead, handwrite it on Prabhupada's letterhead. And then Prabhupada used to sign those letters. So this way Prabhupada gave me a stack of Bengali letters that he received. Then he gave me a stack of Hindi letters. And then one day Prabhupada told me that he was appointing me as his secretary for Indian affairs. So that actually provided me the opportunity to move into the room next to Srila Prabhupada's, Prabhupada's secretary's room. Those days Prabhupada's secretary was Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and so Prabhupada called him and told him that he was appointing me as a secretary for Indian affairs. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj invited me to his room, so we started to share the room. And that also gave me another wonderful stroke of good fortune to have such close association with Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who was a very, very wonderful devotee, an extremely exalted devotee. And we had a very developed a deep relationship. Tamal Krishna Maharaj was known for his aggressive nature, so to say. Like, he was a very powerful individual. Many people thought that he was very well, aggressive, I think, will be the right word. Yeah, I was thinking of whether I should use that expression. But I have seen, being so close to him, I have seen the softer side of him. I saw he was so, he had such a tender heart, and especially when he was serving Srila Prabhupada, I mean, he was so absorbed and he was so concerned. And this is how I had the opportunity to start serving Srila Prabhupada under his leadership, under his guidance. And so this is how I got another opportunity to come very close to Srila Prabhupada. Then Srila Prabhupada, from Mayapur, he went to Bombay. There was a program in the Cross Maidan arranged for Srila Prabhupada. Cross Maidan is a very large park in the heart of Bombay, in the center of Bombay. And so a big pandal, big marquee was constructed there, where every evening about 5,000-6,000 people used to come to listen to Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was giving lectures. And Prabhupada used to be quite, Prabhupada's health was quite frail at that time. He was quite sick. But Srila Prabhupada was so transcendental that although he was physically so weak, but when he would come to give the lecture, we could visibly see that he was so weak. But then as he would start to speak, his body would become more and more straight and erect. Jai Shri Shri Radha Muralidhar Ki Jai. And Prabhupada would be preaching like a lion. And also, one incident that reminds me of Srila, that displays Srila Prabhupada's broad outlook. Like one day, Srila Prabhupada noticed, like there are thousands of people, like every day there used to be 5,000-6,000 people attending that program in the middle of that park. And most of the people would be sitting, and at the edge, all around, people would be standing. So Prabhupada noticed an Arab gentleman in the crowd. He was dressed in typical Arabic attire and long white dress with a head covered with a white piece of cloth and a ring around his head. So Prabhupada saw that gentleman, and Prabhupada sent one of his leading disciples to bring that man onto the stage. So he went and brought that man to the stage, and Prabhupada made him sit on a chair next to him. There was Prabhupada was sitting in the middle of the stage, center of the stage, and there were rows of chairs on both sides. And Prabhupada made him just sit on a chair next to his. And it was such a wonderful sight. Here is a prominent spiritual leader, flanked by his senior devotees and important people of the city, those who had been invited as guests. And then, Hare Krishna, Hare Bol Gopinath, Hare Krishna, Jai Srila Prabhupada. And next to Srila Prabhupada is a Muslim gentleman dressed up in an unmistakable Muslim dress. And not only that, not only Prabhupada asked, invited him onto the stage, Prabhupada was talking to him in a very personal way. And I had the good fortune of hearing what was going on because I was fanning Srila Prabhupada, just standing behind him. And Prabhupada asked that man who he was and what he was doing here. And that gentleman happened to be the chief of police of Kuwait. And he came to India for a medical treatment. And he was in a hospital. I think he had an operation or something. And that was the first day he was allowed to go out of the hospital. And he just came out and he was walking. And then he saw this big gathering. And out of curiosity, he just walked in and he was standing there watching what was happening. And then Prabhupada just invited him onto the stage. Prabhupada even asked him to say something. But the man declined, saying that like it won't be good for him that as a government official to come and speak like that. Anyway, but Prabhupada was having some very sweet exchanges with him. So that man had, I don't know whether you have noticed, many Arabs often carry a kind of a bead in their hands. Like they're smaller beads made of semi-precious stones. And so he had one in his hand. So Prabhupada asked him, "So what do you do with that?" So he said, "I just fiddle around with it." Then Prabhupada said, "No, this is actually meant for chanting the name of the Lord." And then Prabhupada pulled out his japa mala and showed it to him, said, "See, I also have one." And then Prabhupada said that this should be kept in a bag because it's sacred. It's a sacred thing. And it shouldn't be, it should be kept in a proper way. So in this way, Prabhupada had such a very loving, affectionate dealing with that person. So these are some of my experiences of Srila Prabhupada's greatness. And at the same time, in the same program, another incident happened. Like a person kept on challenging Srila Prabhupada. In India, sometimes it used to happen because some people sometimes would become very challenging, thinking that they know better than anyone else. And so this man eventually became his thing became so unpleasant that the people there became extremely upset with him and they practically carried him out of that place, just threw him out because Prabhupada was very patiently answering his questions, but the people there were becoming agitated and disturbed. And so they threw him out. And so this is how Srila Prabhupada was attending the program in Kras Maidan. I used to come with Srila Prabhupada, and then after the program, I used to go back with Srila Prabhupada. And then when we reached the house, Prabhupada there was staying in the house of one of our life members because it was felt that from Juhu to come to the city every day would be very far. It would be a long drive for Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, the arrangement was made in the house of a very wonderful life member. His name was Kartikeya Mahadeviya. And he was so nice, like he had a very nice apartment in a very luxurious area, luxurious apartment in a very posh area, right on the beach, in the beachfront. And he actually moved out of that apartment, with the whole family moved out, and he kept this available for Srila Prabhupada. And we are three of us with Srila Prabhupada, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Bhavananda Maharaj, and myself. And he moved into another apartment in the same complex. So Prabhupada used to come back at night after the program, while the program used to go on. So this Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Bhavananda Maharaj used to be in the program, and I used to come back with Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada used to come back and then lie down, and I used to give him a massage. So one day while I was massaging his lotus feet, Srila Prabhupada asked me, "So, how did you like the program tonight?" No, Prabhupada said, "How did you like my lecture?" So I said, "Prabhupada, it was wonderful." So he said, "So what was so wonderful about it?" And then I mentioned like the points that Prabhupada made and the incidents that took place. And Prabhupada was very pleased, because Prabhupada used to like it when he saw that we listened to him carefully. Then after that, Srila Prabhupada went back to Juhu temple. And there, Prabhupada's new apartment was, Prabhupada's quarters was just got ready on the sixth floor of one of the two towers. And so Prabhupada was staying there. And my service used to be, of course, to translate Prabhupada's books. I was translating Bhagavad Gita at that time. That's the first book I translated. But at the same time, I used to be with Srila Prabhupada as often as possible. And Prabhupada also gave me quite a lot of service. Like one of the service was at 7 o'clock, I used to collect all the local newspapers, daily newspapers, and go to Srila Prabhupada and read out the headlines, the news. And if Prabhupada liked some news, he wanted me to read it. And so this was one service. And Prabhupada would sometimes give purport to the news also. Like at that time, there was this... a lot of turmoil was going on in India, like Indira Gandhi called a national emergency. And then Sanjay Gandhi, her elder son, was causing a lot of distress to the sadhus in Vrindavan, all over, and especially in Vrindavan. And Prabhupada, one day I was reading out about some incidents with Indira Gandhi and Sanjay Gandhi. And Prabhupada told me how corrupt that family was. Prabhupada used to know that family very well, because that family is from Allahabad, and Prabhupada spent many years in Allahabad. He had a close contact with that family. And he was talking about Nehru, his sister Vijayalakshmi Pandit, then Indira Gandhi, and all kinds of things he just kept on saying. And he was then he started to tell what Sanjay Gandhi was doing, causing distress to the sadhus in Vrindavan. And he said that the consequence of that is going to be very, very severe. And true to Srila Prabhupada's statement, soon after that, Sanjay Gandhi died in a plane crash. Right. Another service I used to have those days was Prabhupada's prasad used to be cooked by, Prabhupada's prasad was cooked by one of our god sisters, Palika Mataji. Palika used to cook and I used to serve Srila Prabhupada. When she was ready, I used to carry, make the plate. She used to make the plate also actually for Prabhupada. I used to just bring the plate to Srila Prabhupada. And one day, Palika was sick. She couldn't cook for Srila Prabhupada. So some other god sister was asked to cook for Srila Prabhupada. And when I served, I could see that Srila Prabhupada was not able to eat. Like he took a bite and he just couldn't eat it. So seeing that, I asked Srila Prabhupada whether the cooking was not all right. Prabhupada said, no, she doesn't know how to cook. So then I asked Srila Prabhupada, should I cook for you tomorrow? Prabhupada said, yes, you can try. And the next morning, Srila Prabhupada called me and he asked me to bring some vegetables and things, and then he asked me to cook certain preparations in a certain way. And I cooked and I served. And after Prabhupada took the prasad, I took the plate and I went to clean them in the kitchen. And in the meantime, Prabhupada's personal servant, Upendra Prabhu, used to come and take Srila Prabhupada to his bed. And Prabhupada used to lie down for a while. So after putting Prabhupada to bed, Upendra actually came running to me and he said, hey, what did you cook for Srila Prabhupada today? Srila Prabhupada wanted me to taste it. And that day, at 3 o'clock, Tamal Krishna Maharaj used to go to Srila Prabhupada with the letters, Prabhupada's letters, and Prabhupada used to give dictations to the replies. And so after that, Tamal Krishna Maharaj came to me and he said, you know, Prabhupada was very pleased with your cooking today. And then the next day, I cooked and I served. And Srila Prabhupada took one bite and told me, you don't have any standard. So one day you cook nicely and I praise you and then you are gone. So I felt completely devastated, and especially I was thinking that now I got this most coveted service to Srila Prabhupada, cooking for Srila Prabhupada, and I got this golden opportunity to cook for Srila Prabhupada, and now I blew it. So the next day I cooked as carefully as possible. I was so nervous, I could practically hear my heartbeat, the sound of my heartbeat while cooking. Then I served Prabhupada. My heart was pounding even faster and louder. Then when I saw that Prabhupada didn't say anything and he was eating, then I got some courage and confidence. So I asked Prabhupada, was it all right today? Prabhupada said, yes, today it's all right. Then I told Prabhupada, I was so nervous and I was so afraid. while cooking today. Prabhupada said, yes, when you are serving your spiritual master, you should be afraid and you should be in anxiety. So this is how I got this service of serving Srila Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada's health condition was not really so good. And one day two very important people came to see Srila Prabhupada. Sriman Narayan, he was the ex-governor of Madras, and Ramakrishna Bajaj, the chairman of the Bajaj Industries. So they're actually brothers-in-law. And so they came to see Srila Prabhupada. And when they saw that Srila Prabhupada's health condition was not so good, they suggested that Prabhupada went to some place for a change. Change of weather, change of scene, that would help. And they suggested that Prabhupada went to Rishikesh. So Prabhupada liked the idea. Prabhupada said that he never been to Rishikesh before. So that place, which is a holy place at the foothills of the Himalayas, on the bank of the Ganges, Srila Prabhupada liked the proposal. So Prabhupada agreed to go. And Sriman Narayan actually made the arrangement in Rishikesh for Prabhupada's accommodation. And a small trade team traveled with Srila Prabhupada, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Upendra Prabhu and myself. We traveled from Bombay, we flew from Bombay to Delhi, and then from Delhi we traveled by car to Rishikesh. It was a beautiful house on the bank of the Ganges, the most beautiful house in that area actually. And just three of us, a few others also were there already before. Trivikram Swami, one of our godbrothers, sannyasi, and two South American sannyasis, Viraha Prakash and Pramana Swami. They were already there. They went before Prabhupada's arrival to make arrangements for Srila Prabhupada's accommodation there. So they were there. Then Pradyumna Prabhu also was there. Yeah. Pradyumna Prabhu he traveled, he came afterwards. Pradyumna Prabhu used to travel with a few trunks of books with him. Wherever he went, he had this this metal trunks, metal boxes, carrying his books. So just few of us with Srila Prabhupada. And so I was cooking for Srila Prabhupada, and also I was serving Prabhupada in other ways. Like every night, one of us had to be with Srila Prabhupada. Like our duty, our shift was something like, I used to be with Prabhupada from 12 to 2. Upendra used to be from 10 to 12. Yeah, Upendra used to be there from 10 to 12. I used to be there with Prabhupada from 12 to 2. Then Pramana Swami used to come at 2 o'clock, and then Tamal Krishna Maharaj used to come at 4 o'clock. So for 2 hours we used to be with Prabhupada at night, and we had some very sweet exchanges there. Like Prabhupada used to give darshan every evening. Rishikesh is a very holy place in India. So many pious people go there for pilgrimage. And when they got to know that Prabhupada was there, many people actually used to come to meet Srila Prabhupada. see Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada used to give darshan in the evenings. And these darshans used to go on for quite late at night, because Prabhupada was always so eager to speak to people and preach to them. So one day Tamakrishna Maharaj told Trivikram Maharaj that we have to do something about that. We must have a fixed time. And the time was something like 5 to 6 or 5 to 7. That for 2 hours. No, I think it was 5 to 6. 1 hour Prabhupada used to give darshan. And so after darshan, people used to move out. We used to take them out of Prabhupada's room. And if we found that somebody was interested, we used to preach to them. We means others used to preach to them. Like, I was a very new devotee at that time. But I was also very excited to preach. And so one day there was a very nice young sannyasi from some other school came. And he was an impersonalist. So anyway, after everyone was ushered out of Srila Prabhupada's room, I started to preach to that person. And I was, in course of our discussions, I was just pointing out about the personal aspect being superior to impersonal aspect. I was taking the cue from that verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Vadanti tat tatta vidas tattvam jajyanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdate. That initial realization is Brahman realization. The more advanced is Paramatma realization. And the highest is Bhagavan realization that comes from devotional exchange. And so after that person left, I went downstairs. And Upendra came to me and told me that Prabhupada was calling me. So Prabhupada, whenever we made some mistake, Prabhupada used to be very heavy. I mean, I got a lot of chastisement from Srila Prabhupada. Like, I'll tell you what kind of chastisement. So when Upendra told me that Prabhupada wanted to speak to me, Prabhupada was calling me, I just went upstairs, not really expecting anything special. So when I went there, Srila Prabhupada asked me, "So, what are you doing?" And then I realized that where I was talking, it was just outside of Prabhupada's room. And there was a window also, so I could... And I told Prabhupada, I was preaching Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada asked me, "What are you doing?" So I said, "Prabhupada, I was preaching." And Prabhupada, and I knew now probably Prabhupada will blast me because, you know, I must have done something wrong. And then Prabhupada asked me, "So what were you preaching?" So I tried to briefly repeat what I told that person. That the external endeavor for finding the absolute leads to the dead end of Brahman realization. But then one, coming to the dead end, when he has no other recourse, he has to turn internally. And that is the process of yoga. And through the yoga, when one achieves the perfection, he sees the Paramatma. And when he sees the Paramatma, then automatically seeing the greatness and the glory of that super soul and finding himself to be so minute and insignificant, he surrenders himself. And that surrender leads to devotion. And through devotion only one can see the personal feature of the Lord as Bhagavan. Anyway, I mean, that was the sum and substance of what I was telling that person. And then when I said that, Prabhupada was very quiet. And I didn't know what to expect. So I asked Prabhupada, did I say anything wrong? Prabhupada said, no, you preached very nicely. And I really felt as if my life has been successful. But as I was saying, getting chastised by Srila Prabhupada. One day, Prabhupada asked me to cook one preparation that is made with a lot of chili, red chili, and a lot of ghee. So, at that time, Prabhupada's stomach was not very good, I did not put so much chili in it. So Prabhupada took a bite and he was very upset with me. And he said, I personally taught you how to cook this preparation and you already forgot. So I didn't know what to say, so I was just quiet about it. And in this way, Prabhupada was so upset, whenever I went near him, he blasted me. I personally taught you, and you forgot. In this way, it went on for 2 days. On the third day, when Prabhupada's voice sounded a little more mellow, so I told Prabhupada, actually I didn't forget. I didn't put the chili because your stomach was not very good. That's why I thought that I shouldn't put so much chili. And Prabhupada said, then why didn't you tell me? And then Prabhupada told me that when you put a lot of ghee, you must put a lot of chili because they counteract each other. Chili is heavy, ghee is heavy. But when you put ghee and chili together, they counteract each other. So this is one thing that Prabhupada taught me, and you also can try it out. Another time that Prabhupada, I mean, I'm talking about, you know, getting blasted by Srila Prabhupada. Once in Bombay, Srila Prabhupada wanted me to get some, one morning actually, Prabhupada wanted me to get some orange juice. So in the kitchen, in Prabhupada's kitchen, there was no orange. Then I went to the devotee kitchen, there was no orange. I went to the deity department, there was no orange. So I had to go out to buy some oranges. And those days, there was nothing in around our temple in Bombay. You had to go quite a distance to get anything, actually. So by the time I came back, it took me quite some time. And then I was making the orange juice. Prabhupada used to call us by ringing a bell. There was an electric bell that was connected to Prabhupada's on Prabhupada's table. And so a bell rang. So Prabhupada, I just ran to Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada asked me, what happened to the orange juice? So I said, Prabhupada, I'm just now bringing it. So then I went and tried to quickly make it. But it took me some time. So this time the bell rang again. But the bell just kept on ringing. Just from the sound of it, I could understand how angry Prabhupada must have been. And so then Prabhupada, I just quickly took the orange juice in a silver cup, put it on a silver tray, and just ran into Srila Prabhupada's room. As I opened the door, it sounded like a thunderbolt. Prabhupada just shouted that I didn't have to bring it to him, I could take it back. Now, I didn't know what to do. Like, I couldn't take it back. And so I thought I'll just take it to Srila Prabhupada and let's see what Prabhupada, you know, like since I brought it. So I just took the thing and just kept on holding it in front of Srila Prabhupada without saying anything. I just took it, looking down. I just held it in front of him. For some time, Prabhupada didn't take that, actually. Prabhupada was sitting there. Then finally, Prabhupada picked it up. So when Prabhupada started to drink it, then I realized that I forgot to bring the water for Prabhupada to wash his mouth. So I just ran to the kitchen and got a bowl of water for Prabhupada to rinse his mouth after drinking the orange juice. Then when Prabhupada was rinsing his mouth with the water, then I realized that I forgot to bring the napkin. So I just ran to, I didn't go to the kitchen, I just ran to Prabhupada's cupboard and got a small towel and brought it to Srila Prabhupada. And actually I used to wipe Prabhupada's mouth. And so while I was wiping Prabhupada's mouth with the towel, Prabhupada said, "See, you are trying to serve me so nicely, but I always chastise you. So please don't mind. You see, when one becomes old, he becomes short-tempered." When Prabhupada was blasting me, I didn't mind, but when Prabhupada started to speak like that, I felt as if my heart was going to break. And I tried to speak, I couldn't speak because my throat was choked. And finally I told Prabhupada, "Please don't speak like that. I make mistakes and you correct me. If you don't, then what will happen to me?" And Prabhupada just placed his hand on my head. And so in one hand, sometimes Prabhupada would chastise, but then again he would shower his affection. Another time, I was serving Srila Prabhupada. In Vrindavan, Prabhupada was hardly eating anything. He couldn't actually eat anything. And his condition, his health condition was so bad. And but still I used to cook every day, thinking that if Prabhupada has some appetite and Prabhupada eats something. And so one day Prabhupada, while sitting on his table, when I served him, Prabhupada told me that you have so much to do. Why are you wasting your time cooking when you can see that I don't have any appetite? And so I told Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, I cook hoping that someday you'll develop some appetite, someday you'll get some appetite to eat." Prabhupada said, "And actually, yeah, I said, Prabhupada, I hope that someday you'll get well and you'll develop some appetite to eat." Prabhupada said, "I will get well only when I die." And it came in such a painful way that I couldn't control myself. I broke down. And then Prabhupada said, "Is this what you learned from me? Didn't I teach you that the spirit soul never dies? The spirit soul simply changes from one body to another. Spirit soul is eternal." And this way, as if Prabhupada reminded us that he would always be there with us. So although we may not be able to see him, but he will always be with us. Although we won't be able to see him, he'll be watching us and he'll be seeing how sincerely we are following his instructions. When you start to speak about Srila Prabhupada, we can can go on for hours together, but I think it's getting 9 o'clock, so I'll stop now. Yeah, okay, next time. Oh, yeah, right, I forgot. Okay, yeah, they requested me to tell about that pastime one day. I'll just, it's a brief pastime. Hare Krishna. The devotee told me, the person to whom it happened, he actually told me about this incident. Prabhupada was very particular about his chapati being fully fluffing up. If you serve the chapati, if it is not fully fluffed up, then Prabhupada used to get very upset. So this devotee was Prabhupada's secretary at that time, and he was also cooking for Srila Prabhupada. So he served the chapati to Srila Prabhupada, and the chapati was not properly swollen up. So Prabhupada told him, why can't you make it properly? And he started to give excuse. Prabhupada, the flame was not right and this. So Prabhupada said, okay, come, I'll show you how to make it. The Prabhupada said that now is the blame out to the flame. The flame gets the blame for your inefficiency. So Prabhupada walked to the kitchen and said, come, I'll show you. So Prabhupada rolled the chapati. He baked it on the pan, on the tawa. Then he put it on the fire. It didn't fluff up properly. So he, standing behind Srila Prabhupada, was finding it difficult to control his laughter. Prabhupada didn't say anything. He took another dough. He rolled it. He baked it. Put it on the flame, and it fluffed up perfectly like a football. And then Prabhupada picked it up, slapped it on his face. And walked out of the kitchen. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah. You see, whenever I used to go to Prabhupada, I used to offer obeisances. So one day Prabhupada told me that, why do you always offer obeisances? Just once is good enough. And but still I couldn't, just it was, I whenever in out spontaneously I just do that. So one day Prabhupada was upset with me and he told me that you're useless. All you can do is offer dandavats. Hare Krishna. So, Ananta Prabhu, will you lead some more kirtan?
So, we'd like to thank His Holiness Bhakti Chuswami for a wonderful talk. Hare Krishna. Definitely, I can speak for myself, exceeded my expectations. Thank you, Marsh. Thanks. Om Shikish, can we turn on that AC also? So we will have a little kirtan. Prasadam is ready to, if you have to leave, prasadam is served upstairs, so it's up to you how you would like to spend the rest of the evening. Please stay as long as possible. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare,
Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare,
Hare Rama,
Hare Rama,